Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya.
Page 341. Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter 6, text 32. Atmopamyena sarvatra samang pashyati yorjuna sukham vayadi va dukham sayogi paramo mataha. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. He is a perfect yogi who, by comparison to his own self, sees the true equality of all beings in both their happiness and their distress, O Arjuna. Purport. One who is Krishna conscious is a perfect yogi. He is aware of everyone's happiness and distress by dint of his own personal experience. The cause of the distress of a living entity is forgetfulness of his relationship with God. And the cause of happiness is knowing Krishna to be the supreme enjoyer of all the activities of the human being, the proprietor of all lands and planets, and the sincerest friend of all living entities. The perfect yogi knows that the living being who is conditioned by the modes of material nature is subjected to the threefold miseries due to forgetfulness of his relationship with Krishna. And because one in Krishna consciousness is happy, he tries to distribute the knowledge of Krishna everywhere. Since the perfect yogi tries to broadcast the importance of becoming Krishna conscious, he is the best philanthropist in the world, and he is the dearest servitor of the Lord. Nachatasman manushyeshu kaschin me priyakritamaha. In other words, a devotee of the Lord always looks to the welfare of all living entities, and in this way he is factually the friend of everyone. He is the best yogi because he does not desire perfection in yoga for his personal benefit, but tries for others also. He does not envy his fellow living entities. Here is a contrast between a pure devotee of the Lord and a yogi interested only in his personal elevation. The yogi who has withdrawn to a secluded place in order to meditate perfectly may not be as perfect as a devotee who is trying his best to turn every man toward Krishna consciousness. Agyanatimirandhasya jnananjanashalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Vandeham Shri Guru Sietaf Parakabalam Shri Guru Navaishnavamsa Shri Rupam Sagujatam Sahagana Raghunatam Vitam Tam Sajiva Sadvaitam Savatrutam Parajana Saitam Krishna Taitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamsa Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Generally, among people of pious disposition but very little knowledge, it is considered that someone who goes to a cave or simply sits in the forest and meditates, he is the leads an extremely severe life, severely austere life. They consider him to be a very great yogi. And often when such persons see the preachers of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness traveling in planes and cars with computers and cell phones and all these things, they think, well, they're not very advanced. But this is due to their misconception of what spiritual life actually is. To understand what is spiritual life, you have to understand what spirit is. What is spirit? That yesterday I was explaining that Brahma, the Sanskrit word in Sanskrit is Brahma, that which is spirit. So it's Brahma and Param Brahma. Param Brahma means Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So spiritual life means to understand that we are servants of Krishna and to act in His service. And simply to go away to the forest or in a cave and meditate without a sense of service to Krishna is actually not much better than leading a totally materialistic life, because it's the same attitude of avoiding Krishna is there. This bhogan tyag. Generally, the conditions of all things, Ishvaraham aham bhogi, I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer. But one who finds that it's too troublesome, that material life is so troublesome, then he becomes a tyagi. And he goes away. People think, oh, very advanced. But actually, his tyag is just another form of bhog. Because he's finding that the attempt to enjoy the material world is too troublesome, so it'll be nicer for me. I will be more satisfied if I simply leave it all. And then he gets a reputation as a great yogi or maharshi or something like this. However, a devotee understands that actual spiritual life means to serve Krishna, and to serve Krishna means to do what he wants to do. Just like Arjuna thought that, I don't like the fight, I won't fight. I will be very spiritual and not fight. And Krishna told him, you're a rascal, you're nonsense. Please don't lean on Bhagavad Gita. You should do what I want you to do. That is your actual spiritual life. And Krishna wants him to fight, which doesn't seem very spiritual. But if it's done for Krishna, that is actually spiritual. That's Krishna's desire. And not to fight and to be non-violent in a situation where Krishna wants us to be violent, that is actually spiritual. Spiritual means to act according to Krishna's desire. Then we say, how is fighting spiritual? How could Krishna want fighting? Well, he comes to this world for that purpose, paritranaya sadhunam vinashayata dushkritam, to protect the devotees and destroy the non-devotees, or the rascals. Dushkriti means rascal. So some fighting may be there. Of course, Krishna, just by his will, he can destroy them all. But he also likes to fight. There's some kind of pleasure in that. Otherwise, why there's boxing championship, or this taekwondo, that's kind of fighting now, that's exercise, isn't it? I don't know, something like that. Anyway, jujitsu, that's fighting. Well, it's supposed to be self-defense. Anyway, people take pleasure, they take pleasure in fighting, wrestling, all this thing. Even these sports, it means competition, so it's the competitive principle is there. So Krishna takes pleasure in that. So his pleasure, that is the center, that is the central point of all existence. So a devotee doesn't question why Krishna should like this, but he contributes to that if Krishna so desires. So in the present age, Krishna has come as Sri Krishna Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, and he said, Prithivite ache dota nagara digram sabhatra pachahoi bemarana, that my name will be preached in every town and village of the world. So a devotee tries to satisfy Krishna by fulfilling his desire. And whatever may be required for preaching Krishna consciousness in the world, he's prepared to do. If he thinks, I will be a greater yogi and not go in a plane, I'll just sit in a cave, and there's not yoga. Yoga means to link with the Supreme, so we can link by him with service, not by avoiding his service. The gross materialist avoids Krishna's service by indulging in gross sense gratification, and the pseudo-spiritualist he avoids Krishna's service by pretending to be very spiritual, and other people may think he's very spiritual by hiding away in a cave. You missed so much of the class. Is it? So, this is not actually spiritual. And then these so-called yogis and maharshis, they go to some remote place and they preach how we're all one with God and they're considered self-realized. But simply they have realized a different phase of rascaldom, that's all. They're not yogis. They're simply cheaters. So everything should be understood philosophically. Mostly people take to what they consider to be spiritual life on a sentiment only. That they may be very scientific, and scientific means following some system. But what, if at all they take to spiritual life, they'll often be very sentimental. Once, I've heard that there are many highly placed scientists in India, some aerospace scientists or something, government. Aerospace in India means all government. There's no private concern doing this. So in Bangalore, and they were saying how they're great followers of this Sai Baba. That means they're very scientific in their life, but when it comes to spiritual life, they're completely foolish, because they consider him to be Bhagawan, when he's obviously not. And for instance, the great sage Parashara, in Vishnu Purana, he has given the six prominent symptoms of God, of which one is all beauty. So then this so-called Sai Baba is immediately disqualified, because he's one of the ugliest persons on the planet, probably. But people, sentimentally, they think, oh, Baba will bless us. He will give us, we will get some ashes, which you can just light a fire and get some ashes. But we're getting some sacred ashes from Baba and some blessings for material prosperity. So in this way, they're willingly cheated. They suspend their intelligence when it comes to understanding spiritual life. So one should apply one's intelligence. Bhagavad Gita is meant for intelligent people. Unfortunately, some people, they take books and they simply keep in their home. Or you'll see people do puja to Srimad Bhagavatam, but they never read it. They never try to understand what's inside it. So the real understanding of spiritual life is to understand what Krishna is telling in Bhagavad Gita and to follow that. Otherwise, we don't get much benefit from simply doing some puja. Or there are people like to go to Bhagavad Gita. What do they call it? This Jnana Yajna. There was one famous Swami in South India who, fortunately for himself and everyone else, has died now. Of course, no one dies, but he's gone on to reap the fruit of his so-called spiritual life. So he used to give these Bhagavad Gita discourses, and anyway, nothing, just telling jokes. They have this, they have these TV channels in India now that's Asta, Sanskar, and they're just, it's all spiritual. I never watched them, although I did a few shootings for them. But I'm told that they just tell how to, all the yogis or swamis come on and they just tell how to relieve stress and how to improve your career, and they tell a lot of jokes, and people think this is spiritual. And they never even talk about God, or even if they do, it's all the same usual rubbish. I'm God, you're God, everyone is God. And so in this way, people are willingly cheated. They don't understand actually what is spiritual life, and they don't want to. They want to have the feeling, I'm very spiritual, I'm very good, while they go on with their totally materialistic life. And they like this kind of Baba who's very austere, very, very renounced, living in a cave, and they like to go to him for blessings. Or maybe not living in a cave, maybe living in a mutt, and they go to him for blessings, and he also likes to have all these big, well-placed people all around him, increases his prestige, but nothing to do with what is actually spiritual life as described in Gita and Bhagavatam, which means surrender to Krishna. So in the name of spiritual life, how much cheating is going on. We should be very careful, because Kali Yuga means the age of quarrel and hypocrisy. So mostly it's all cheating going on. And even we see people take to Krishna consciousness, but often in a very sentimental way. They don't really try to go deeply into understanding what is Bhagavad Gita. They think if we lead a good moral life and chant Hare Krishna and we're vegetarian and we get initiated, and that's good. But what is the actual meaning of surrender? Now, it's not likely that we're going to be asked to fight for Krishna as Arjuna did, but we can try to understand from Arjuna's example what surrender means, what Arjuna had to do. He's already a pure devotee of Krishna, but so Krishna, you may think, shouldn't have put him through such a difficult test, but he did. Because surrender means we have to be prepared to do anything for Krishna. He didn't want to, who would want to fight with his near and dear ones? Who would want to fight with anyone in such a horrible way? But Arjuna was taught, you see, now you surrender. Surrender for you means to fight. So he may not be asked to do such a thing, but we are asked to give up all our material attachments, which is painful because we feel attached. It's just like, you see, there's one kind of austerity the Jains do. They pull out their hairs. You know, this is a stupid thing to do, but anyway. Like I say, people have very strange ideas about spiritual life. So some Jains, they have this pulling out their hairs one by one, and that's one kind of an austerity. So like that, we're attached. And if we're attached to something, it becomes very painful to remove it. Like pulling out your tooth. If you do without anesthetic, it's extremely painful. So these attachments that we have, they're very strong. Like in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, anasa. What is that? Anasaktana bishvanga putra dara grihadishu. That a symptom of knowledge is not being attached to sons, wife, home, and all the rest of it. So that's... how can we give up such attachment? It's very strong. I've seen several times that older men who have been practicing Krishna consciousness for some years, initiated devotees, their children are all grown up, and you ask them, now you come out of home and you don't stay at home anymore, now you go and do bhajan. And they don't like to do it. They can't imagine such a proposition. Even they're chanting Hare Krishna so many years. They may be giving classes and so many things, but the attachment is so strong that they can't do it. They just feel, of course they can do it, but they don't have the resolve to do so. So we don't ask everyone to renounce everything immediately. And we don't ask anyone actually to renounce, rather we ask everyone to engage everything in Krishna's service. Just like Bhaktivinoda Thakur said, manasa deho geho jo kichuma apilun tua pade nandakisha. That nandakisha, Krishna, my mind, my body, my home, I'm offering everything in service to you. So that's more realistic for most people, that instead of trying to cultivate total detachment, that whatever is there, that you change that attachment from being attached to home, wife, and children and all these things for our sense gratification, by making Krishna the center and living in home life only for the sake of satisfying Krishna, only for the sake of. Now, of course, the householder also has various material obligations with family and friends and all these things, but as far as possible, one should, a Krishna conscious householder will change that to the attachment for, or make that Krishna conscious, just like they like to have birthday parties, which is, it's actually a Western idea that they have a birthday party. In Vedic culture, on the birthday, they'll call the brahmanas and give gifts and have some chanting of mantras for the benefit and protection of the child, but it's not supposed to be like for the sense gratification of the child. So the child becomes the center. But in the Vedic culture, if there's any birthday ceremony, Krishna is in the center. So that's the better way to do it. It'll be more beneficial for everyone concerned. So like this, if there's some birthday and whatever birthday, all right, invite everyone, have kirtan, give them prasadam, give some gift, and ask them to bless the child like this. If we're attached to having this kind of ceremony, there's all these sangskars are there. They're mostly for family people that the attachment can be dovetailed in Krishna consciousness. Everything, putting Krishna in the center. But this has to be done, otherwise the family life is simply the entanglement that shackles us to repeated birth and death. So we have to not only take to Krishna consciousness, but take very seriously and understanding this philosophy. What does it mean to be Krishna conscious? Another thing I see is often very popular. Of course, this is a good thing that devotees, they learn to chant shlokas, and especially the South Indians, they'll learn so many shlokas and mantras and Bhagavad Gita and this. But that's good, but more important is to read the books and understand what it means. And understand what it means not just to learn the translation, but to enter into the spirit of it. And that is required. That means we have to read the purports also. Prabhupada said that his purports to Bhagavad Gita are more important than the translations. That's amazing, isn't it? Because the translation means what Krishna spoke. But actually, unless we understand this, then we'll misunderstand it. And Bhagavad Gita is maybe the most misunderstood book in the world, because it's deliberately malinterpreted by various so-called swamis, ironic that Bhagavad Gita is meant to lift us out of ignorance, but so many so-called swamis, in the name of preaching Bhagavad Gita, they simply increase our ignorance. Because instead of giving the actual message of Bhagavad Gita that we're supposed to surrender to Krishna, they concoct some nonsense such as that, there is no such person as Krishna, or that we're all God, or so many nonsense things, which in Bhagavad Gita, Krishna directly refutes such misconceptions, but in the name of Bhagavad Gita, the so-called swamis, who are actually cheaters, they say that Krishna has come from the impersonal, unmanifested, but Krishna himself directly refutes this misconception in Bhagavad Gita. Avyaktam vyaktim apanam manyante mama buddhaya. He says that those who consider that my personality is manifested from some impersonal absolute, they think so because they are abuddhaya. It means they have no intelligence, fools. So they can get away with this because there's no systematic teaching of spiritual knowledge. Sai Baba or something like this, there's so many so-called Kalki avatar, and they could have never got away with this 200 years ago in India. They would have been executed by the Brahmanas would have had them executed by the kings for just like Pondraka in Krishna Leela. There was one king who was imitating Vasudev, Krishna, and Krishna laughed at him and killed him. So, because he was a cheater. We find also in Bhagavatam that King Vena, he was a king, but he was misusing his position, and the Brahmanas, by mantra, they killed him. So, actually, that should be done for all these people. They're simply cheating, but because there's no actual spiritual knowledge in India, it's not taught. So, therefore, people easily cheated, because there's no proper teaching. We find nowadays mostly the Iyengars or the Tamil Brahmana worshippers or in the Sri Ramanuja Sampradaya, who traditionally they were engaged in. There are so many Divya Desams, or holy places of worship of Vishnu in Tamil Nadu. But mostly all these temples are run down with hardly anyone there. Or maybe the archak or pujari comes for 10 minutes in the morning. And that's all. And they're all worshipping Sai Baba or Kalki or the bottle of whiskey. They lost their culture. Why? Because there's no systematic training. It's not taught anymore. So it's so important that we understand that what is actually this philosophy of Krishna consciousness. Prabhupada has given us so many books that we're supposed to read and enter into the spirit of it. Enter into the spirit of it means that we don't read with a filter. That when we find something we don't like, we just kind of filter it out of our consciousness. We just like the nice bits. We like to hear about Krishna with a nice peacock feather on his head and a nice blue-colored boy. We like to hear this, and it's very nice. But we don't like to hear all these things like we're not supposed to worship demigods and we're supposed to surrender to Krishna and all this kind of thing. So we have a mental filter that we just read the things that we like, and the other things, well, you know, I don't know what, but it's kind of blind spot, or it doesn't register in our consciousness. So there's a kind of self-cheating. So those who are actually devotees, they talk like this. Because Atmopam Yena Sarvatra Samam Pashyati Yojuna Sukang Vayadi Vadukam Sayogi Paramo Mataha. Who is an actual yogi, he sees that I suffered in material life previously because I was envious of Krishna. I had so-called happiness and material happiness and distress. Therefore, I had to suffer. Now, by the mercy of Guru and Krishna, I'm able to practice Krishna consciousness. But he sees others, they're not in Krishna consciousness, they didn't get this fortune. So he speaks to them in such a way that they can come out of this happiness and distress. I was also suffering like this previously. So now let people take to Krishna consciousness and go beyond birth and death. One of Prabhupada's books, Beyond Birth and Death. What is beyond birth and death? Beyond sukha and dukkha, that is understanding Krishna, serving Krishna. But serving Krishna means, just like in the Bible it said that God, He is a jealous God. What does that mean, jealous? That means that He doesn't like or He doesn't accept service. Service should be for Him only. That we can't serve Krishna properly if we think that he's just one of so many other gods, or we shall worship so many gods and also worship Krishna. No. Shuddha bhakti means kevala bhakti, for Krishna only. Of course, we can worship those who are devotees of Krishna, and demigods are also devotees, but better is to worship the pure devotees rather than demigods who are sakam bhaktas. The demigods themselves, they're devotees, but they have material desires. So, if we worship them, then we can't get Shuddha Bhakti, because they themselves don't have it. And they themselves, and apparently not very, in most cases, not very desirous of it. So all these points have to be understood. So you please study these books. You have a set of Srimad Bhagavatam?
Yeah, I have some of them.
Some of them. Why don't you get a full set?
Okay.
And then you can become a Bhagavat in the true sense of the term by studying Bhagavatam. You please do. You have a set of Bhagavatam?
Only one.
Oh, then you should get. You should go through all this. Now you have to read out loud. You can do Srimad Bhagavatam. Then you can have a Bhagavat as a child. Otherwise, he'll be bhogavat, bhogi. So you give them. It's your main duty to your children. You have to give food, clothing, shelter, education, all these things. But most important, you have to give the spiritual education by which they can become free from birth and death. Because Bhagavatam states that Guru nasasyat, Janani nasasyat, Devang nasasyat, Chapatis nasasyat. What's the next one? Patis. Patis nasasyan. Oh, now I forgot it. Namo. Namo chayadya samapetam ityam. Means that one should not become a father or mother or relative, or should not accept respect from others, should not become a guru, should not take any superior position to others, unless he can deliver from birth and death. So it's a very grave responsibility. Are your parents delivering you from birth and death? Are they teaching you about Krishna? You, yes. Oh, okay, that's good. All right, so we'll finish there. I don't think you'll find it in the index, because the index is only...
Ida, shloka.
Yeah, it's...
Sometimes they have index of quoted
shloka. Oh, right, yeah.
I was looking if they had it, yeah.
So, any question about this?
Well, I have a general question, not...
Okay, please ask it.
Like, in various pages of the Bhagavatam and Bhagavad Gita and other books, they said woman has been considered lower class.
Where is it stated?
Like, in the...
In Bhagavad Gita, Lord Krishna says, Manghi pate vyapashracha yepi syuf papayone aha striyo vaishas tata shudras tepi yanti param gatim. He says that even those of lower birth, and he gives the example of vaishas, shudras, and women, if they take shelter of me, they can attain the supreme destination. Yes. So it's considered a lower birth, because generally the male form is considered better for self-realization, because the tendency that comes with the woman's body, that we get different bodies according to our previous consciousness, karmic reaction. So with the woman's body, there generally comes a tendency for strong material attachment. Whereas it's the psychophysical condition of men and women is different, as anyone can understand, unless they're brought up in the modern way of life, in which they try to say that everyone is all the same. But women, their body is meant for giving birth to children, and they have the mentality that goes with that they have to look after the children and be very much attached to them. So they have a certain kind of psychophysical condition. And men, they're more, the psychology of men, and this is in general terms, of course, is more inclined towards philosophy, endeavor for understanding the Absolute Truth. Women are generally more religious, and men are generally more spiritual. Religious means they like to do pujas and pray to God, but generally for material benefit. Whereas men, in general, are more inclined towards the trying to understand the spiritual truth. So for this reason, it's said that birth as a woman is a lower birth, because the tendency, because of that strong attachment, which is, it's difficult for them to discriminate what is actually for their best self-interest. However, in other ways, it's the woman's birth may be better, because if she gets a good husband, then it's much easier for her. Vyasadeva, when he was asked, which is the best yuga? So he said, Kali Yuga. That's there in Bhagavatam. Kalo sabhajyanti arya gunagya sara bhagina yatra sankirtana naiva sarva swato bhilabhyate. That those who are actually intelligent and understand the essence of everything, they say that Kali Yuga is the best. Or they worship Kali Yuga because simply by performing Krishna Sankirtan one can achieve all the goals of life. So Kali Yuga is the best. And which is the best varna? Shudra. And which is the best linga? Stri. So he explained that for the Shudra and the Stri, simply if they get a good master or husband, then without having to go through so many difficulties, they can achieve the topmost perfection. So yes, it's the physical or the karmic situation of being a woman is less suited for spiritual realization than that of a man. But as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, if they take shelter in me, they can achieve the supreme destination. Which even if a man doesn't take to Krishna consciousness, he's not going to achieve Krishna. So a woman in Krishna consciousness is spiritually far better situated than a man who's not. Because after all, we're not the body, we're not man, we're not woman, we're not Kshatriya, Brahmin, this and that. But it's simply a statement of the starting point. It's like a handicap or something like that in the race. It could be considered like that. Although, from another point of view, if you may not be a good jockey, but if you get a good horse, you can still win the race. So. So if like that, if a woman gets a good husband, or she may be very spiritually strong herself, also. So from the material perspective of what is suitable for spiritual life, the woman's situation is less advantageous. But nevertheless, if they do take to Krishna consciousness, then they have equal opportunity to be Krishna conscious. It's just like, let's try and think of some example that someone in India who wants to go to America to get the benefit of it, if they have some good degree, they may have a better chance of going to America. And if they don't, they're less likely to go. But somehow or other, if they get out here, then to the land of opportunity, then they can work and earn money. So there may be some immediate handicap, but if one does take to Krishna consciousness, then one can go forward and progress. But still, it's better that's almost always recommended. It's still better that women follow their stri dharma within Krishna consciousness, and not try to be a sannyasini or something like this, because the following stri dharma, that will help them to live in this world and become Krishna conscious. It's not that by taking to Krishna consciousness we should give up our... Krishna says, sala dhamman parityaja mam ekam sharanam raja. You give up all kinds of dharmas and just surrender to me. But he wanted Arjuna to do that by fighting, which was his swadharma as a kshatriya. So generally our swadharma, or the kind of dharma that comes with the material situation we have, that is conducive for, if we stick to that and cultivate Krishna consciousness, that is generally conducive for attaining our actual swadharma, which is the atma dharma, or the dharma of the soul. Is that all right?
Because the other portion we say, like Krishna himself says, that mother is worshipable.
Mother is worshipable, cow is worshipable also.
Yes, I was thinking that for the female.
But cow you have to deal with as a cow.
Yes.
So, woman has to be dealt with according. Cow, you feed grass, take milk, you show the stick. That's required for a cow. Cow is worshipable, but still has to be dealt with as a cow. So, mother is worshipable if she acts like a mother, and not like this modern playgirl. That's not worshipable. But actually, if they're actually following Sri Dharma, then certainly worshipable. But still, women and men, by their psychophysical nature, are different. And those differences should be maintained. Because if we try to treat differently, then it will get a mess. Just like if you try treating a cow as a mother, but if you bring into the home and expect her to do the cooking, then you won't get any idlis, or for you, chapatis. So she's a mother, but a mother in a different way to the mother of your body. So that it's that said the cow is worshipable, but that doesn't mean worshipable in exactly the same as Krishna's worshipable. Now sometimes when we say all these things, we think that they say, well, we're against women. But no, it was by saying these things, we're actually, it's for women, helping them. Because if you don't understand, if we think that artificially everything is all the same as is promoted in modern society, and also unfortunately by some of, within our ISKCON, by some misguided devotees who think that we have to adjust the teachings of Shastra to the modern age. And so we end up with a mess. It doesn't work. We should understand what is in Shastra. Shastra is more important than modern sociology. Modern sociology is made by misguided people. So that's actually a fact, that women, one of the very strong need that they feel is for protection. They need a man to protect them. They can think, I'm independent and this and that, but they're never happy unless they're protected. So they require the protection of a husband. And to be protected, they require to be submissive also. Otherwise, the man won't want to protect them. If they think, well, I can look after myself, I have my own job, my own income, my own car, I don't need anyone. So they can have a career and they can be independent, but they won't be happy. So you teach your daughter to cook. You can cook?
No, not really a lot of things.
You please learn, that's very important.
I can put milk on the stove.
Okay. Like, you know how to make idli?
No.
Dosa?
Idli. No, I've watched my mom.
Idli appam. That's the way you learn. Yeah, you do also. In Bombay, two devotees, they had a love marriage. And then after, I knew the both of them actually. And then afterwards, just after he got married, he told me that, oh, I just found out my wife doesn't know how to cook anything. And I only know how to cook khichdi. So that's what they were living on. So where's the fun, you know? Where's the happiness? She was a career woman. So after that she got a job in England and she left her husband. So be careful. He was left to cook khichdi in Bombay, and she was off in England, probably taking from the fast food, Chinese, whatever it is, and having a great career, and to hell with her husband. So what's the use? What's the use of this? People used to live very happily in India, isn't it? Very simply, no big ambition, very religious. Now they're advanced and modern and progressive and divorced. So they're not so happy now. Modern life is a disaster. Why Indians want to follow the Western culture? It's Prabhupada said the most foolish people in the world are Indians. So because in the The West is anyway foolish, but Indians are more foolish because they have the best culture and they want to give it up and take that culture. Foolish or unfortunate, I can't remember. Anyway, both are apt. So better be a really intelligent Indian and stick to your own culture as much as is possible in this ridiculous modern way of life. Chant Hare Krishna. And follow all these old traditional usages as much as possible. If you follow them, it's very good. Instead of sending the wife out to work, that was considered first of all, it wasn't ever considered. And then when it started, it was considered a disgrace. That the man, he can't provide, he can't look after the family. He has to send the wife out. You're so useless, you can't maintain your family. But now you'll find in the advertisements, they want working wife. She must go out and work and bring more money. Money, 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 that's the most important thing. You have to have money to pay the lawyer for your divorce case, right? So you better both earn. Both husband and wife have to earn money to pay off the lawyer who'll take it all away from you later on. Nunang pramata kurute vikarma. Yes. Pramata, Rishabdev says. They're all crazy people. In Hindi it's pagalpan. So these are all good words. I don't know what it is in Tamil. What's the word for crazy? Whatever it is, I won't be able to pronounce it. So.
Paityam.
Paityam.
Yeah. Paityam.
So.
Srila Prabhupada says in the purport, people are mad after sense gratification.
Yeah, and that's the shloka actually. Yeah. Yeah, please.
You know, nowadays I find that most of the men, they want their wives to be working.
That's what I'm saying, yeah.
And then, don't you feel it's like more of the age is like this? That
the age is like this, and it's crazy.
Because in case she's not educated, and in case she's not working out, then it is difficult for her also, because she won't find a, because most like as we see in India, all the boys, they're educated, they want their wife to be equally educated. And they want to, like, may not want her to be working, but they want her to be equally educated, so that she, when she is equally educated, then she gets the tendency, okay, I also need to work.
Yeah.
I also need to go out.
I need to go out, and then you spend more time sitting in an office with men who are not your husband. You know them better than your husband. And then attraction comes. You like them better. You never see your husband and he's always in a bad mood because he's... So this is what happens.
But that's true for men also who go out.
Exactly. So that's why men and women, they should be separate. Not all mixed up. Otherwise you're courting disaster. If you insist I must work, why not get a job at home? Traditionally, women, it's not that they weren't working, but they were working at home. There was so much work in the home, or even economically, they might be weaving or doing handloom or something like this, or making pickles for selling. So they were contributing to the economic life of the family, as well as the domestic life, but from the home.
This is in sequel of that question, because normally, like, I know that tradition is like that, like when boy is an engineer, so then when they go out for finding a match, I say education, so they also like...
The whole idea is rotten from the beginning, that why women should have all this big education, it's just training them to be not to be mothers, and they don't want to be mothers. And they have children, but they never see the children because their career comes before their children. And then the result is that the children, they're totally psychologically warped and they become drug addicts and violent, and they themselves can never have a proper family because they don't know what it means to live in a loving atmosphere. They come home, there's no father there, no mother there. So their mother and father becomes the TV. And they no mother to cook food. Mother never cooks. She doesn't know how to cook. Just take something out of the freezer, put it in the microwave. There's no love. Mother is, her main function is to be an ocean. This material world is very harsh. So the mother is at home, very loving. She's helping everyone to, but by being an ocean of love, she's so kind and she whatever you, she's always sympathetic. But she doesn't. In modern age, they don't have time for the children. They hardly see them, and children are a disturbance to their career. They have their career, and then they want to. They come home at night, and they want to go out to some party, and children are just a disturbance. So give them some money, buy some sweets, but no love. So what is the use? What is the use of being so much educated and having a career and all this? And the whole society becomes totally degraded because there's no one has any love, and in their frustration like this, they become violent, they become sexually depraved, they become drug addicts. This is the result. You're thinking of my benefit, I want to go to work, I want to get more money, but the mother's duty is to sacrifice. There's no one has any sacrifice, everyone's just thinking of themselves. Therefore they can divorce in 1 minute. Oh, I don't like this husband anymore, I don't like this wife anymore, drop it all. It's a demoniac society, and we're thinking that it's good because we're foolish.
On the other extreme, like in India, we see so many cases when women at home, it's misused, like burnt or all those things when she's not...
Well, we're not saying that.
No, I'm just saying...
We're not saying that you keep your wife at home and burn her.
No,
It's not... You see, this is poor logic to think that if you keep women at home, they'll get burned. The whole culture has to be given.
Actually, what he says is treatment.
No, but we're not saying that. Why bring this up at all? We're not preaching that you keep women at home and misuse them. But there's this modern idea that if keeping women at home is an insult to them, it's abusing them. No.
But in India, it happens.
But what? I'm not talking about the worst. I'm saying you follow the actual culture. I'm not saying you keep women at home and mistreat them. I never said such a thing. Why do you assume that? We're talking about the pure culture. That in modern India, this is the proper culture isn't going on, doesn't mean that we should give up all the culture. We should find what is the actual culture and follow that. It's not true that keeping women at home means that they must be mistreated. But that's the propaganda nowadays. And keeping them at home means to mistreat them. Why don't you find out what is the actual culture? You don't know. You can read my book, Glimpses of Traditional Indian Life. I'll give you some idea. Now they're in India, they're following the Western ways, and all the same thing is coming. Divorce, children don't care for their parents. Why should they care for them? Because the parents never cared for the children. They don't respect their parents because the parents are not respectable. They don't act in a respectable manner. They don't set a good example. They don't lead a moral life. So why should the children respect? Respect can't be commanded. Sorry, can't be demanded. It has to be commanded by one's behavior. Okay, we'll finish there. We'll talk more about this in the evening. You want to ask another question?
No.
All right, Hare Krishna. All guys to share.
It's
a question may be small, but the answer could take millions of books. What is the purpose of life? It could be a small question.
In Bhagavad Gita part, translation, page number 176. Srila Prabhupada, during the translation, is demigod should be offered on the folded earth.
Yeah, so this is early part of Bhagavad Gita where he's talking about the early stage of karma yoga. But then later he goes on. In other words, offering to the demigods, that's better than not. One should, the beginning of dharma or karma yoga is to recognize the demigods and offer to them. But then later, that's better than just being a totally non-religious person. But then later Krishna goes on to explain karma istaisthai hritagyana prapadyantenya devataha, that so people worship the demigods simply for material benefit. So that's actually not, later explains, is actually not a very advanced stage. It's a more advanced stage than being totally irreligious, But you have to go further also. And then he also says, what is that? Yo-yo-yang? No, that's it. No, no, not this verse. That Mamaiva vihitan hita. It's Ajay, everything is meant for me, Krishna says. Those who worship the demigods, they worship me, but indirectly. Tepi mam eva konte, yeah. It's meant for me. It's actually meant for me. Yeah, he got it. Yepi anyadeva ta bhakta, yajante shodayan vita. Tepi mam eva. That is meant for me. It's actually meant for me. But they don't know that, and therefore it becomes a fault or a mistake. Hare Krishna.